And welcome to the Stu Peters Show. I'm Paul Harrell, filling in for Stu. So as the godless left marches the world toward the kind of public debauchery seen in the pages of the Bible that describe the destruction of the cities Sodom and Gomorrah, many Americans understandably are asking the question, how did we get here? I suspect many of us ask ourselves this question every single day because not a day goes by where some new level of moral depravity is described, or in the case of the leftist media, celebrated in an article's headline. So how did we get here? The simple answer is we allowed pagan secularists to convince us we could govern ourselves with neutrality, meaning they convinced us to passively accept that God has no place in public life. Yes, you can still go to church and worship God in a building once every 7 days, but whatever you do, do not let your Christianity spill over into the streets. Now, of course, their entire premise was and is a lie, because that is Satan's all-too-familiar tactic. He is, after all, described as the father of lies. Neutrality is, in fact, a myth, because everyone stands for something, everyone worships something. The Bible says we actually have two choices, worship the creature or the creator. And this is why some Christians who are awake and hip to the scheme of neutrality reduce the cultural argument or choice to Christian nation or pagan nation. Which one will it be? What is the United States today? Are we a Christian nation or a pagan nation? The answer is obvious. America is a pagan nation whose leaders cringe at the very mention of Jesus Christ and the idea that we owe him our allegiance. In fact, the other day on Twitter, the phrase "Jesus Christ is Lord" was trending, and one user criticized Elon Musk for allowing the trend because he believes the phrase to be, quote, anti-Semitic, end quote. So don't misunderstand me. America used to be a Christian nation. That much is obvious to anyone who takes an objective look at history. In fact, the Constitution assumes the president will always be Christian because the countdown to veto a piece of legislation does not include Sundays, which is an exclusive weekly Christian celebration of the resurrection of Christ. The Lord's Day, if you will. It's also not my intent to blackpill this audience. There is much cause to hope, and there are signs that Christian red states have had enough and may pave a way out of this mess. All across the country, Christian red states, mainly from the South, are passing laws making child abuse via the trans sex religion illegal. Maybe some of these state legislators have discovered that secular neutrality is in fact a myth, or maybe they haven't thought too deeply about it, and the evil wickedness on the left, on display for all the world to see, has so disturbed them, they feel compelled to act. This compulsion is because the Rainbow Gestapo has come for our children. They say this in their own words. They literally need our kids to grow up and become perverts like them because the Rainbow Brown Shirts aren't having babies. Their pedophilia movement depends on feeding off the offspring of women and men. You know, normal people. It is the targeting of innocent children that is a bridge too far. And then the Bible also says that it would be better for a millstone to be tied around your neck and cast into the sea than to cause any of these little ones to stumble. And that's specifically directed at those, saying that they are, in fact, the church. Leading children down a path to destruction, death, and hell is a wickedness that is waking up even the least religious among us from a deep slumber. But to be honest, until the Dobbs decision, this country's national policy on children and protecting them was that they didn't even have rights until the mother said so or until they were born. Since 1973, the Christian consensus in this country has been gone. We're a nation that sacrifices our children in order to continually gratify our sexual desires without the burden of a child. We're a nation that created a special class of people who could legally murder their babies and face zero prosecution from the state. And as a result of this, churches have been increasingly under attack. Since Roe v. Wade in 1973, mainline Protestant denominations have been flooded with challenges to orthodoxy. I mean, think about it. If women can murder their children and not be prosecuted, why can't they also be ministers in the church? Or here's another one. If the protected class of women are allowed to get away with murder, why can't they be pastors, ministers, and deliver sermons about how abortion isn't sinful and is actually holy? That actually happened this past week. So how did we get here? Well, lady pastors are sure further up the slippery slope of where we are now. Feminism and women ruling over men is surely one of America's idols in this age. But like all idols, they fail us. And here's an example of how the idol worship of women and the quest to destroy the patriarchy has failed us. We have a sitting Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who told the United States Senate she doesn't know what a woman is. So because of the satanic trans cult, we can no longer define the one thing that was supposed to end the patriarchy. So all of the feminist work and labor for equal rights is gone. Whether it's a biological male destroying a woman in a UFC octagon, or a hulking male swimmer pretending to be a woman, the idol has transformed and a new deal has been made. You want separate female and male sports as well as equal government funding? You're a bigot. And by the way, men can have babies. So it's clear that America is reaping the rotten fruits of godless pagan secularism, and it's time for Christians to recognize this fact. Many Christians are fighting back and have started advocating for something called Christian nationalism. The term was originally used by the left to attack Christians as Christo-fascists, but it's being embraced by some who see the Bible as the guide for ordering civic life. Stephen Wolfe is an author, and he is the author of The Case for Christian Nationalism, and he joins us now. Stephen Wolfe, it's an honor, sir. Welcome back to the Stu Peter Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I have so many questions, and I want to really get into, as best we can, just kind of your thought process behind your support for this idea of Christian nationalism. And I know that can also mean different things to different people in different theological circles. But my first question for you is, when were you convinced that Christian nationalism was the way forward? And what were your thoughts before you came to this conclusion?
Like you said, it's a kind of a term of derision. It's used as a derogatory label to hurl at really just any conservative Christian. That's what it was used for years. And then I realized that eventually, like, I am a Christian and I am an American and I love this nation and want this nation to order itself according to Christian principles and for Christian according to Christian truth. And so I became convinced that Christian nationalism is the way. And it was actually a realization that for many years I had been developing these ideas, and I didn't have an actual label that encompassed it, that actually kind of captured everything that I was thinking. And once I realized, you know, just take this, own the label, and put forward your argument for what it is, what you think it should be, and how people should think about these things, and just own it. And I think that's kind of the way forward for many people. I don't think everyone has to commit themselves to Christian nationalism as the label, but I hope that the arguments that I have are convincing that they can adopt the elements of it.
Yeah, so here's the thing, and I've said this many times, you know, because the left, you know, wants to be so anti-Christian, and they promote this constantly now, the term Christian nationalist, I guess I just feel like at some point, if you believe in Jesus and you vote and you live in America, they're going to call you a Christian nationalist whether you agree with that term or not. That's how they see us. They fundamentally see us as the enemy. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the Christian or the evangelical voting bloc in the country is really kind of this bulwark against the insanity that has taken over our institutions. And that's why I think this idea of, quote, white Christian nationalism, this label, has been is used so often, so they can make evangelicals look like the bad guys and make them the enemies. And I think that evangelicals just need to stay strong, see themselves as a voting block that is really, like I said, putting up the sort of roadblocks of the insanity caravan that's kind of trying to take over this entire country. And as Christians kind of need to see themselves as having this kind of special place, not only in American history, but also at this moment, and need to stand strong. I mean, we are the ones who are pushing back against the left, at least within terms of like the demographics and the group. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think a month or so ago, you had a controversial tweet about that very thing. And the point you were making wasn't lost on me, but, you know, it was, there were a lot of very sensitive, I guess, evangelicals on Twitter who didn't like what you were pointing out. Don't like to even be, identified as a white voting bloc that also believe in Christ.
Yeah, and the point wasn't so much let's be white identitarians. It was simply saying that if you think of the group that is hated the most by the American regime, it's, and in their own words, white evangelicals. I think it was white evangelicals voted for Trump twice at 80% in the last two elections. That's the highest, as I understand, the highest voting bloc that voted for Trump and also for Republicans. So yeah, they despise white evangelicals. So here I come along and say, you know what? They are the outliers and they're right on most of the issues. And so we should have their back and support them. And again, as I said in the infamous tweet, they have been this consistent voting bloc against the very people who are trying to trans your kids and trying to sexualize everything. And in fact, they're the ones opposing the racialization that is coming. But this idea that everything is a matter of race is actually opposed by the very people the regime hates.
And your point was if all of a sudden that voting bloc went away, we would fall off the cliff. Whatever we're holding on to, it would be over. So in your book, The Case for Christian Nationalism, you talk about the function of a nation. So can you just tell our audience, the Stu Peters audience here, what is your definition of a nation? What are the characteristics and the responsibilities of a nation state?
Yeah, I think as a nation, I think is fundamentally a people. And it's a people who have certain similarities, cultural similarities. They have a similar history. Generally, they have a similar kind of ancestry, but not necessarily. So like in the United States, people can have different ancestry, but still feel a part and be Americans because their loved ones have participated in major events in the past. So you think of a big uniting event like World War II, where you had Italians just go back to the Civil War, where there was Irish and others of these kind of new arrivals who participated in these great events. Same thing with World War II. So there is a sort of commonality commitment to the nation as a nation. It's not purely propositional. It's not purely a list of we affirm this, we don't affirm that. It's an actual connection of your own loved ones and yourself to that nation. If there was a country next door and they affirmed the same propositions as you do, I don't think that you would still feel at home if you went to that other country. You know, just because, oh, you show up and say, oh, I affirm these 10 points too. Now I'm one of you. A nation is something where you have this sort of similarity and common history, interconnected ancestry in some ways, and a kind of a common commitment where you really have nowhere else to go. If it hits the fan and you have to stand up, then you're not fleeing or going somewhere else. This is your country, and that's where you take your stand. So that's what I think a nation is. And then nation state is, of course, the state being the government that kind of, you know, administers justice and that sort of thing. Hmm. When I talk about nation in the book, I emphasize more that this idea of a common place and people.
So in my monologue, you heard me talk about, you know, secular neutrality and that sort of thing. So how has the concept, in your opinion, of this secular neutrality that so permeates really every aspect of our lives, how does it affect American Christians, maybe more specifically Christian leaders or evangelical leaders, as we interact with the culture, as we process the events of the day?
Yeah, I'd say that people have generally kind of bought into this idea of neutrality, but only within the last few decades. And it shows really the power of what law and how institutions can normalize certain ideas. Because before the 1960s, 1950s, everyone believed that this was a Christian country from the left to the right. So if you go into the progressive era, even the left-wing Christians were like, well, if we are a Christian nation, then shouldn't we have this social gospel with all these programs? So there was this idea of a Christian nation. But then you get into kind of the secularizing in the 50s and 60s and 70s and up to today, and Christians just have been normalized to think that that's what America is all about. And they hear a narrative about the founding and the First Amendment and all that, but they don't actually realize the broader history of the United States, which is thoroughly Christian in their self-conception. We've completely bought into this idea of neutrality. And so instead of saying, hey, this is our Christian country, we ought to be a Christian country, we talk about the idea of Christians, the public square is contestable, and we can kind of insert our arguments from the Bible, but not the sense of, hey, maybe we should order our common life around Christian ideas, Christian principles, Christian nationhood. And so that's why there's been kind of very negative reaction towards myself and those who kind of follow this Christian nationalist view, is they think it violates some sacred norm that is really only a few decades old. And we're showing up saying, wait, we're just as American as anyone, but we see America according to its actually larger history in the last few decades, the history from prior to the founding, at the founding, 19th century, and at least the first half of the 20th century, which is presidents quoting the Bible, presidents saying we're a Christian nation, Supreme Court decisions saying we're a Christian nation, all that sort of thing. So,
yeah. You know, and I mentioned earlier what I call them, these Christian red states. That's what I'm calling them, because the people are voting for Christian lawmakers who are stopping or attempting to stop this trans agenda. And in my home state, where I live in Arkansas, I mean, I can just tell you the amount of legislators that are going down to the floor and are quoting scripture, quoting the Bible as the reason for voting yes on some of these bills is higher than I've ever seen it, and I've covered it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so, to your point, this is, whether they know it's Christian nationalism or not, or whatever, it's happening in very, very much organic ways. And again, and we'll talk about the law here in a minute, how it doesn't save, and the separation of church and state. In your version of Christian nationalism, though, I want to know, is there room for freedom of religion?
Yeah, absolutely. So the when you think of freedom of religion as originally understood at kind of the founding era and in the 19th century, kind of as it further developed, there was the nation actually thought of itself as Protestant, and it was the Protestantism that affirmed, thought of itself as the basis of freedom of religion. And if you lose the Protestantism, then you lose the freedom of religion. And that was a very common view for a long, long, long time. That's one reason why they were afraid of, probably irrationally most of the time, but they were afraid of Roman Catholics, as they thought Roman Catholics would not support religious freedom and other freedoms of kind of this Anglo kind of Protestant origin. So yes, the answer is yes, there would be religious freedom. But as a Christian people, you would expect institutions to have officially and in practice embrace Christianity, but allow people to have these exceptions and that sort of thing. So, that's just common practice. So of course, you know, Jews would have their synagogues, Muslims would have their mosques, and other, what, you know, historically kind of like heretical sects within Christianity would have their space. But in terms of this original conception of American life, it was, we are Protestant and our institutions are going to reflect that. And that was, again, very common until just the last few decades.
Right. I mean, it's amazing, really, when you think about it, just the last few decades, and how it really, this idea of neutrality, this idea that you can just have some sort of secular government without any reference to God. You know, I was born in 1984, and, you know, even I remember how different it was back then than it is now. And I know that's sure with every generation, when you're careening down this slippery slope of moral depravity the way we are. But it is interesting how, according to you, it really happened. It's very recent phenomenon, how we've been conditioned to believe that our faith, our Christian faith, is something that needs to stay behind the confines of a church building and not spill over into the streets. And it also comes with this idea, you know, religion and politics. You don't want to discuss religion and politics, but I think the truth of the matter is, if you talk politics, you should have to talk religion. And I think that is where we need to go with this. Can you talk about in your book, talk about the parts of your book that distinguish the function of the civic government in this Christian nationalist idea versus the, you know, ecclesiastical authority of the church? So, for example, you don't believe that having Christian laws is in any way salvific. It's not like it's going to save the people from their sins.
Yeah. Thanks for asking that. I forget how people get hung up on this question. So the classical Christian conception of law, even if it's a Christian law, even the more kind of authoritarian ones that says you must go to church, none of these, or even the ones that kind of suppressed heresy and blasphemy and all that, no one believed that a law could actually change someone's belief. You couldn't legislate belief. You couldn't say you will be a Christian, and if you don't affirm, sign the dotted line, we're going to kick you out or tax you or something. In a Christian state, especially a Protestant one, and Roman Catholics are the same now, it's a matter of persuasion. So the idea for like a Christian nationalism is not that if you're in this nation, you are a Christian in your heart and you're bound for heaven. A Christian nationalism is where, okay, well, we need to establish these conditions, outward conditions, that one of the things it does would then be kind of conducive or encourage people to have true faith. And so something like having a Christian culture where I always mention Mayberry, and Mayberry seems like this nice kind of comfortable Christian town, where there is kind of that subtle kind of nudging towards Christianity and Christian belief. In older times, it was often kind of more blatant law saying you must do this or must not do that. But there was never a legislation of belief, and I'm not advocating for any sort of compulsion with regard to belief. But that doesn't preclude you having a nation that says we are Christian and we're going to order ourselves in that fashion.
Be clear for the audience, so this idea of a Christian nation, it would be distinct from and would not be the spiritual kingdom of Christ.
Right, yeah, that it would not be. And that's a really, really important distinction. Nor would it be something where the nation is a church. It would be, I just think, like, think of 19th century America. It wasn't perfect there, of course. But with regard to like church-state relations, religion flourished within the 19th century. I mean, there was all sorts of some kind of silliness in some areas, but it flourished in a lot of ways. In fact, James Madison, near the end of his life, was saying, look, when we disestablish, there's religiosity is higher now than it was before. That's the way I'm thinking, that it would be a nation of Christians and there'd be a multiplicity of churches and denominations. But there would be, as Vogelin, Eric Vogelin once said, it would not be immanentizing the eschaton. It would not be pulling heaven down to earth. It would not be bringing the kingdom of God or making the civil kingdom the spiritual kingdom of God. So that's all denied in my book. Again, the main purpose is if we order ourselves as a Christian people, as a Christian nation, it encourages us as people to faithfulness in Christ. And also it's just a better life. It's not just the heavenly salvific aspect. It's also that our own earthly life will be better if we are around other Christians who then correct us and challenge us and set expectations for us. And just think of your own kids, like your kids. I think you said you have young kids. I have young kids.
Yep.
And think of them in a society, like, again, I think of Mayberry because what's his name? Opie, what's his name? It's Opie, right? He's always walking around the kid, you know, the young kid, he's always kind of running around getting in trouble in town, but no one's worried that he's going to be get harmed by someone. There's no criminal activity, very little. So that's a sort of Christian ideal I'm envisioning for Christian.
You mentioned Mayberry, and you've talked before, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, Russell Moore used to be affiliated with the SBC, now editor, I think, at Christianity Today. Why do you think Christian leaders seem to almost celebrate that Mayberry in America is gone? That's what it feels like.
Well, I mean, it's not just feel like. I mean, Russell Moore said that explicitly. I mean, I'm not even putting words in his mouth. He essentially said that it's good that America as a place, kind of like Mayberry in a sense, has collapsed, because then we know who the atheist is and who's not. We know who the hypocrite is, or there's no, it kind of, oppression tends to eliminate the hypocrites and separates kind of sheep from the goats within the world. And so that's the good. He says now he knows who to minister to. I challenge that view in the book. I mean, not only do we see the destruction of the loss of cultural Christianity in the country, which is just moral anarchy, I do also think that in fact it is good to have neighbors who are nominal Christians, so that we can all actually combine, kind of encourage each other towards true faith, instead of being instead of trying actively to trans and turn our kids gay. I mean, it's a great point.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty obvious, but
kids going to drag shows, parents putting them on puberty blockers. I'm sure glad Mayberry is over. I mean, you know, it's child abuse. If we're ever, you know, if the communists win and we all get put in gulags, I'm going to be pretty upset that we don't have Mayberry anymore, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and it's a matter of loving. We always hear about loving your neighbor, but I mean, it's actually a condition where you're surrounded by even nominal Christians. Like, it's better even for someone to be in a way a nominal Christian, because then they'll live not perfectly and probably not as good as if they were true Christian, but they will at least have this basic morality that makes a nice, just, safe society.
Yeah.
But without that, what we have, which is, it's not even like a pagan society had moral standards. We're like a, people like to say post-Christian. We're like a post-Christian paganism in a way, in the sense that it's just utter moral insanity that even pagans would say, what in the world are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're doing what to kids? And
calling it healthcare.
calling it healthcare.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Okay. So, I want you to square something with me. How does the story in the Bible about the Tower of Babel and the God, you know, confusing the languages, mm-hmm. how does that inform your Christian nationalist position when also considering the unity that all Christians, regardless of what language they speak across the planet, have in the finished work of Christ, his death, burial, and resurrection?
Yeah, so I argue in the book that actually forming nations is a natural thing. It would have happened prior to the fall. I think that the people often bring up the idea of the Tower of Babel as kind of a defeater of that. But I mean, just prior to that story, the Tower of the Babel, there's this kind of table of nations that God basically lists out. So I think there already would have been there would have been nations anyway. The Tower of Babel was just
I'm bringing it up because, and that I understand what others might say. I'm bringing it up because it's obvious that if you can't speak the same language, you're not able to continue to construct your tower to the heavens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got your question. I've received like thousands of criticisms, so I heard that one and I thought I went towards the Babel one. But yeah, I know what you're saying. That's a good. Yeah. So even as Christians, like when you become a Christian, you join in a way kind of this spiritual higher nation, this nation that will in the eschaton in heavenly life will be one people visibly, because Christ will come and the kingdom and the elect will be true and revealed. But prior to that, we have different languages. So when you become a Christian, you don't adopt some new language. You don't adopt some new customs. You still retain the customs and the way of life that you had before you were a Christian. What grace does and what Christian becoming a Christian does is it corrects those errors, those moral errors of your life. But it doesn't grant you like this new set of like this new way of life, such that if someone in China and someone and you as an American all become Christian, somehow you can form a civil polity and kind of have a civil life equal to someone who speaks your own language. So I think that's what you're getting at. I think even as Christians, we will have, if you have multiple Christian nations in the world, they'll all be Christian. They'll all be part of the higher, like, eschatological life, the life to be revealed with Christ in the end times. But at the same time, before that happens, we'll still have these important distinctions. The most obvious, like we said, is language. And so I think there'd be different Christian nations. Does that kind of answer the question you're asking?
No, it does. It does. Because you know, I've read in preparation for this interview, I've read a lot of the criticisms, and I'm sure your critics are going to say I haven't asked the right questions, but that's fine. But that just personally was one that it's a distinction that when you go to Christian Twitter, specifically when you go to Christian nationalist Twitter, and the battles that are going back and forth, I wanted you to make that distinction because I think that is, I think it's a logical opinion to have. I mean, I just think it's a self-evident truth about the way the world is working and ordered right now, you know, while we await the return of Christ. Last question. Okay. Oliver Anthony, this number one song in the world, Rich Men, North of Richmond. What were your thoughts about it? What were your thoughts about the way some evangelical leaders reacted to it in the negative?
Yeah, I didn't see too many evangelical leaders react. I guess I did a little bit react negative to it, but most of what I saw was positive, and it was actually very encouraging. That young man is now become famous, and I think we need to pray that he handles that well. I know that I went from, I'm not famous, but I went from obscurity to less obscurity, and it was very challenging to deal with that. So, but he's within the span of a couple hours became famous almost worldwide. So I think we need to pray for the guy and that he can handle that well. But yeah, I think he's capturing what people have said. I don't have anything, you know, special to say about it. He's capturing a sentiment that many people feel, and especially people of kind of this white working class that feel like they are unnoticed. This is one reason 2016, while Trump did so well. But this was an expression of that. And I think everyone, even if you're maybe middle class, upper class, whatever it is, or don't live in rural districts or other places, you could kind of understand where he's coming from and want to do something about it. I mean, think about the concern of like suicide rates among lower class, like working class whites, the fentanyl, the drug use. They're just, it's a demographic that people forget, that the regime certainly doesn't like. And I think that his kind of emotion in that song really kind of touched a lot of people. And hopefully it woke a lot of elites up, the right elites up to try to give these people support in policy.
Yeah. Stephen Wolf, thank you so much for interviewing, doing this long form format here on the Stu Peters Show. Your book is The Case for Christian Nationalism. What's the best place? Where do you recommend people to go buy this thing?
I think you can get it on Amazon, and you can get it at Canon Press. I don't know which one I get more royalties from. It doesn't really matter to me. But you go to Canon Press or Amazon if you want to pick up the book.
We want to help you, but it also is helping Jeff Bezos. So maybe the folks at Canon Press.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go, okay. Go for Canon Press.
All right, Canon Press. We'll make sure that's in the link in the description of this video. Stephen Wolf, it's an honor. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Alrighty, folks, this is the Stu Peters Show. Don't go anywhere.
We're seeing unprecedented criminal tax hikes, hyperinflation, a full-blown recession, and it's all part of the grand plan. The billions of dollars that Biden keeps sending to that corrupt, fake Ukraine. The trillions in new taxes that he wants to shove down your throat. The electronic banking system crash, resetting everybody to zero. Checking accounts, savings accounts, 401ks, IRAs, all of it. Zero. But you don't have to be a victim. Protect your money and get up to $10,000 in free silver to do it when you call my friends at Goldco. Goldco has helped to protect over $2 billion in gold and silver for people like you and me. And now they're offering you up to $10,000 in bonus silver when opening a qualified IRA account just for being a supporter of the Stu Peters Show. So whether you want to protect your 50 grand or a half a million or even more, This is your opportunity to protect yourself from our out-of-control, corrupt corporate crime syndicate. Don't be a victim. Call GoldCo, 855-706-GOLD. Again, 855-706-GOLD, or go to goldco.com/stew.
Are you getting sick all the time? The bioweapon boosted are breaking our immune systems. Chemtrails fill the skies. Don't fear the shedpocalypse. Destroy impurities. Protect your children with the future of air purification. Trustfiltersuck.com.
Watch how quickly our machine pulls out dust, shedding, quantum dots, mold, bacteria, viruses, anything that grandma might have brought over from Boosterville, California. We drop it down to the ground as a biologically inert substance.
Sleep easy with 24/7 protection. Get a unit for your home or the portable device to shield your kids at school. Use promo code STU for huge discounts. Filtersuck.com, your antidote against poison in the air.
At some point, we've all been sold a big lie, including yours truly. It's called the protein lie. Starting in the 1980s, supplement companies began pushing massive protein consumption. We all believed that more protein equaled more muscle growth. I'm here to tell you that's a big fat lie. No surprise. Let's say that you eat an 8-ounce chicken breast. You're consuming about 40 grams of protein. However, just because something contains 40 grams of protein doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to absorb all 40 grams. No, without enzymes, most of it ends up in your toilet bowl. So if you don't have a sufficient supply of enzymes to digest the protein, your muscles will be starving for those vital building blocks. That's why it's crucial that you take a high-quality enzyme. The one that I trust and use myself is called Masszymes by Bioptimizers. Masszymes is a full-spectrum enzyme formula with more proteins than any other commercially available, with 5 different kinds of proteins. You can try it today, risk-free. Their 365-day full money-back guarantee is the gold standard in the industry. When you go to bioptimizers.com/stew, be sure to enter the coupon code STUPETERS10 to get an extra 10% off of your order at bioptimizers.com/stew.
And welcome back to the Stu Peters Show. I'm Paul Harrell, filling in for Stu. So American mental health is in a state of severe decline. It's no surprise. According to one 2021 survey, about half of the country shows symptoms of either anxiety or depression. 11% of people over the age of 12 are on antidepressants. For middle-aged women, it's over 20%, 1 in 5. Millions more take anti-anxiety medications. Quite a few people take both anti-anxiety pills and antidepressants. But despite all of the pills, America's sense of mental unwellness is only going up. So maybe it's not something that can be fixed with another big pharma product. Maybe we should look elsewhere. One place to look is Curable's stable of natural safe products that can be used to tackle anxiety by dosing in manageable increments instead of drugging yourself into a zombie-like washed-out state. Justin Finneman is National Sales Director with Curable. You can check them out at curable.com and use the promo code STU. That's Curable, K-U-R-I-B-L.com, and use the promo code STU. Justin Finneman joins us now. Justin, thank you so much for coming back on the Stu Peters Show.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So these statistics, this 2021 study, really, it's incredible to me. The antidepressant epidemic, I mean, the people that are on them, of course, we had a couple of years ago, we had this study that came out that showed that, you know, it actually doesn't correlate necessarily with serotonin levels and depression, and kind of blowing up this whole idea, this big pharma scheme that's been selling people all these drugs to make them happy or to keep from being depressed. It's actually, the correlation's not there according to some studies. And I go back to COVID and I go back to all of the forced mask wearing, how people had, they didn't want to dissent at all, or at least so many more Americans, much more than I ever thought. My fellow countrymen just fell in line like sheep in so many instances. And then one day it dawned on me, maybe it's the antidepressants. I mean, if you've got 30 million Americans or whatever the number is on antidepressants that make you less docile, that make you possibly not think about these situations in a critical manner, they just complied and they go along to get along. And so I think that's just one aspect to where we are a drugged up nation. And we are taking these massive doses of pills, and we are not the better for it. And yet there are alternatives, and Curable presents those alternatives.
Yeah, that's a really cool way to
it's a mouthful.
Kind of transition into this, though. I mean, this is something that hits home for me, Paul, because, you know, my wife's father passed away when she was, I believe, 16 or 17 years old. He passed from brain cancer. But as any 16 or 17 year old girl would go through an incredibly difficult time. The first direction they put her was the drug Lexapro. So, you know, there might have been a purpose at that time in her life for that drug. But the reality is that we don't understand the effects of that drug on her brain, especially long term. And we see this across the board with people that we interact with all over the place that want to get off these pharmaceutical drugs, the antidepressants, the anti-anxiety medications, but they just really don't know where to go or where to start.
Okay, so let's talk about this product that you offer at Curable.com, Delta 9. What is it? What is it designed to help?
Yeah, so the first thing I want to clarify is that people ask all the time, you know, where does your product come from, right? And I want to clarify that the cannabis plant species is a plant species that grows a marijuana plant, but it also grows a hemp plant, okay? So everything we are doing is derived from the hemp plant. Okay, so it is not a marijuana plant, but within the hemp plant, you can get small amounts of Delta 9 THC. Okay, so it is federally legal to have a small percentage of Delta 9 THC in even your full spectrum CBD products. Okay, it is a naturally occurring molecule that is present within the hemp plant. Okay, so that dose is not going to get you high. A lot of doctors believe there are therapeutic benefits. And then we have different products where it contains the trace amount of Delta 9 THC, which is 0.3% per serving. Or we have the light therapeutic dose products like the gummies or the cookies that are either 1 milligram of Delta 9 THC or 5 milligrams of Delta 9 THC. And we're not dabbling in getting into the high concentrated products that are being produced all over the country, where that's where it relates back to what you opened the show with in regards to what people hear the negative side effects of Delta 9 THC or THC is when they're getting the highly concentrated products that are coming from marijuana in 20, 25, 30, 50, 100 milligrams a serving. And that's what we have to look out for.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you made that distinction. I mean, because when you just say the letters, the acronym THC, people just automatically think, oh, that's the chemical that gets you high. They say CBD doesn't, THC does, but I didn't know that. So I had no idea that there were trace amounts of THC in a hemp plant, but they're in such low doses that you don't have any of the psychoactive effects, but you still can get some of the benefits. And so Delta 9, this product over at Curable.com, do you recommend this? I mean, is this for trying to deal with maybe depression or trying to deal with anxiety, but not having to go down the big pharma rabbit hole where you end up addicted for the rest of your life?
Great question. So this is not just our opinion. You can actually do the research yourself. If you go to PubMed.gov and you look up the studies that have been done across the board on the endocannabinoid system, on CBD, on Delta 9 THC, on different forms of cannabis, they will show you in all of these studies that you can find therapeutic benefits to all of these cannabinoids. And one of them being Delta 9 THC. And Delta 9 is just the professional term for THC. Okay, THC and Delta 9 THC are very similar. It's just whether you're getting it from a marijuana plant or you're getting it from a hemp plant, which is obviously the way we're getting these products, getting these molecules into our products. So yes, there are therapeutic benefits. If you're on an antidepressant, you have to be very careful about anything you add into your regimen. Okay. So again, as we talked about last time, there's personal accountability in regards to the research you do, if you have a physician you trust that will be open-minded, but also there's no perfect remedy for any person and you have to start somewhere. And that's why we start with the light therapeutic doses that have really benefited people in regards to pain, sleep, and then also at times anxiety. But again, we're fighting against the stigma of the highly concentrated THC products that can actually cause anxiety in certain people, again, what we're doing is completely different on the light therapeutic dose side.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the quality of the ingredients, the quality of the products are good too, right? So even, I know we're talking about Delta 9 here, but, you know, you offer a wide spectrum of, CBD products and everything else. This is not your gas station version of CBD products, correct? I mean, this is totally different from that.
Let me tell you why. So using Delta 9 THC as an example, most states require you to test for four significant metals that should not be present within the product. What we did at Curable is we recognized, because we process hemp for companies and for farmers all over the country, we recognized that through our own internal testing with our chemist, that some of these metals beyond the four required metals to test for were showing up in higher capacities than even the state requires you to look into or to have these quantities at. So what we did is we literally paid an enormous amount of money to send our Delta 9 THC products down to another facility down south to have them third-party tested again to ensure that all of our internal testing matched what we were finding and that all of our numbers of heavy metals and unhealthy other solutions were not present within all of our Delta 9 THC products. Not many people do that. They do not invest beyond the requirements of the state to ensure that you have a product that is safe for human consumption. And we do.
Wow. That's absolutely incredible. You're doing you mentioned you're not, most other companies are not going to do what you're doing, which again, I just have to highlight, that's one of the problems with regulation. The people that are regulating a lot of these companies, they're not experts themselves, right? And so then you have, it actually breeds mediocrity. Well, I'm just going to go this far versus what you're doing is actually taking care of your product because you care about the people that are going to consume it. And we don't have that these days, right? I mean, we have an entire a food supply that's poisoned. We see what they're doing to the sky. We see what they're doing to the air. We see what they're doing to the water. And I mean, you just go look at the products on your grocery shelf. Probably most of the stuff in your pantry, you can't even sell over in Europe, for example, because yeah. You know, the people over here don't want to disclose what natural flavor is because they know we'll look up what comprises natural flavor and probably find that the components are likely to cause cancer or some other disease. So we are inundated right now with companies trying to sell us products, Justin Fenneman, that are not good for us, whether it's cheap or whether it's something more nefarious, where it's an intentional poisoning, which is kind of what I think it is. So I just want to say it's refreshing that we have somebody like you who is, you know, going above and beyond, testing your products, having third parties test the products so that, you know that you're not getting something that's, you know, filled with poison and the ingredient you're seeking, but it's, you know, this is good stuff. So I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. And I think that's why ultimately we've made such a mark in the medical community with the doctors that we're currently working with in over 30 states is they have looked into this hard, and the doctors that truly care about the patient and getting to the root cause of what disease is and health, they want to see efficacy on the back end in regards to how you grow, how you process these plants, and how you test them. And we've checked the boxes at every step of the way there. And it's been so important to the family to say, hey, you know what? This is our core belief. We need to deliver a product to the people that they can trust as far as consumption is at the ultimate highest quality in regards to, we want to make sure we address the efficacy of safety before we address absolutely anything else.
Yeah. Okay. So to recap, too many people are on antidepressants. I think it makes them docile and more compliant with the government, and maybe that was the plan all along. We don't want to get trapped in some sort of big pharma feedback loop where we're constantly having to take more and more of their drugs. You have Delta 9 that can help with this, although want to consult your doctor before you just stop taking antidepressants. And the products are third-party tested, so you know there's not any heavy metals and things like that in them. What else did I miss, Justin Fenneman? I'll give you the last word.
Well, I just think that what we've done a good job of is caring about the consumer from a standpoint of cost as well. We feel like we offer the Cadillac of CBD and Delta 9 THC products at almost an affordable Kia price, if that makes sense. And we've done that because we've seen the consumer say, especially in today's times, we can't afford all these products that we want to take or things that could actually help us. So we've done a good job at integrating into the market and saying, look, we hold ourselves to the highest standards possible, but we want to make sure that families who actually need these products can afford them. So we're really proud of that. The way we support our customers that way and the clinics we work with, that is what we're all about. We're not about just making X amount of profit. It's making this truly affordable and available for families across America. So, yeah, that's what we're really passionate about and proud of internally here at Curable.
Yeah, and that's a service. And it's also old school. This is how Americans used to do business with one another, offering services and actually helping people. And mutual benefit. I really appreciate it. It's awesome. It's really good to get to know you, Justin Finneman. The website is KURIBL.com, curable.com. And you want to make sure for big savings that you use the promo code STU. Justin Finneman, thank you so much for coming back on the Stu Peters Show.
Paul, thank you. And just so everybody knows, you use your 20% off code with STU for a limited time only for 72 hours. Again, over the weekend, we're going to take all Delta 9 THC products, gummies, cookies, everything we have, and we're going to discount it an extra 10% here moving forward for 72 hours. So thank you so much for all your support here and appreciate all of our listeners and customers.
That's 30% with promo code STU at curable.com. Again, that's KURIBL.com. 30% off. Use the promo code STU. Justin, have a great weekend, sir. We appreciate it.
Paul, thank you so much. You too.
All right, folks, that's all the time we have for this edition of the STU Peters Show. My name is Paul Harrell. Thank you so much for watching and have a great weekend as well.
Everybody now knows that we live in an upside-down clown world under an empire of lies, a murderous regime. So previously, it may have sounded crazy, but I'm sure you won't be surprised to learn that liberals are very upset that people like me are advertising the Vanish holster. They cannot stand how this holster has helped get more Americans armed than ever before. What's so special about this Vanish holster, you might ask? Well, simple. It is the most comfortable holster ever. The most comfortable holster I've ever worn. I have plenty of experience, 15 years in bounty hunting. Lots of experience with holsters and firearms. And when you get a Vanish holster, you'll never stop carrying because you'll forget you're even wearing it. Plus, the Vanish holster saves you money. That's because it fits 99% of all semi-auto handguns. It works without a tactical belt. It lets you carry in multiple positions. It carries two fully loaded magazines. And best of all, because you're a viewer of this program, you get it for $50 off. I am told that this discount is set to expire soon. So kick in your special pricing. Lock it in right now. Go to vanish.com/stew. That's VNSH.com/stew. VNSH.com/stew. It's all back for the money back guarantee. And I believe them when they say it's the only holster that you'll ever need because it's the last one that you'll ever buy. Vanish.com/stew right now, today, before this discount expires.
Taxation is theft, especially when your money is used to fund evil.
Wear a mask. Get boosted.
Corona hoax, mass deception, America controlled by fear. Good news, there's another way. You can stop paying for the crimes and cover-up today through Freedom Law School.
The best thing you can do, according to the IRS's own official auditors, is to stop filing and paying income taxes.
Based on the government's official websites, there is no law requiring 99% of Americans to file and pay income tax. See the proof for yourself on freedomlawschool.org. Don't wait to drain the DC swamp. Start your journey to freedom from IRS deception, robbery, and slavery. Starve out the problem. Weaponize your earnings. Defund the swamp and fund the truth and freedom movement today. Go to livefreenow.org and restore the freedom we all miss.
We're seeing unprecedented criminal tax hikes, hyperinflation, a full-blown recession, and it's all part of the grand plan. The billions of dollars that Biden keeps sending to that corrupt, fake Ukraine. The trillions in new taxes that he wants to shove down your throat. The electronic banking system crash, resetting everybody to zero. Checking accounts, savings accounts, 401ks, IRAs, all of it. Zero. But you don't have to be a victim. Protect your money and get up to $10,000 in free silver to do it when you call my friends at Goldco. Goldco has helped to protect over $2 billion in gold and silver for people like you and me. And now they're offering you up to $10,000 in bonus silver when opening a qualified IRA account just for being a supporter of the Stu Peters Show. So whether you want to protect your 50 grand or a half a million or even more, this is your opportunity to protect yourself from our out-of-control, corrupt corporate crime syndicate. Don't be a victim. Call Goldco, 855-706-GOLD. Again, 855-706-GOLD, or go to goldco.com/stu.